I'm Phil C.
And I'm Lynn.
And together, we're Rome and Oz. Real interviews.
With real people.
On location.
With a great mix of Aussie music.
As requested by the people we interview.
Follow us on Facebook.
Or check us out. AllAussieRadio.com.au.
Now syndicated too.
Backwater Country. 87.6 FM.
Tuesdays and Fridays.
At 9 PM. All interviews are live.
And on location.
And may vary in audio quality from segment to segment.
So, Phil, what's on the show this week?
Well, then we've only got two guests on the program today.
That's correct.
And it's a husband and wife team.
Yes.
It is indeed. And very, very famous in their own town.
Yes.
Of Lowhead. Lowhead in Tasmania. Now, the husband.
Vince Brophy.
Vince Brophy. What can we tell our listeners about Vince Brophy? My goodness, isn't he a talented individual?
He is, very.
Extremely talented
musician,
singer
and photographer,
songwriter.
Yes.
And what about his photographic skills?
Yes.
He's got some of the most incredible photographs that he's taken, and with, I guess, Photoshop, he's turned them into real works of art.
Yeah, he has,
hasn't
yes.
he? Mm. Unbelievable.
Very impressed.
I'm not sure which I prefer, his photographic skills or his songwriting and singing.
No, very talented man.
And his lovely wife, Margie.
Yes. She can be found at the Bass and Flinders Museum in Georgetown.
Bass and Flinders. Now, what a wealth of information Margie was.
Yes, she was.
Goodness gracious me. And made us feel so welcome and told us all about that fabulous Bass and Flinders Museum.
Yep.
And, you know, she's a singer as well.
Ah, yes.
Although she doesn't like the sound of her own voice.
No, she doesn't.
Sounds like somebody I know. Sounds like you, Lynn. So you don't like the sound of your own voice either.
Nope.
And you're not a singer.
No, I'm not. Definitely not.
Definitely not a singer. So what I'm going to do is, because I really want the listeners to understand Vince's talent as a singer, and he's got several albums. So I'm going to play a couple of his songs.
Right.
Now, I'm playing four in total. One is a request for him.
Yes.
One is a request for Margie, and two of the others just favourites of mine.
Right, okay.
So we're going to start the program with a song called Down to the Sea in Boats.
Which is off the album Down to the Sea in Ships.
Which I don't quite understand, but anyway, nonetheless. Yep. Straight after that, we've got the interview with Vince, and then the song that he selected was a number called Famine Island, which is from an album called Brophy's Road.
Yes, that's correct.
Then after that, the oldest town in Australia.
Yep.
And Margie's request, which is her interview directly after that song, Letters to Anne,
yes.
which are both on the same album, Between the Moon and the Sun.
Yep, lovely.
Fantastic. So, Lynn, what do you think? On with the show.
Let's go down to the sea in boats, for I'm a sailor on the sea. Let's go down to the sea and see what we can see. Dressed in our Sunday best, we'll ride over the dusty, bumpy road down to the Belma Basin tide. Neck to knees are all the rage. Let's go down to the sea in boats, for I'm a sailor on the sea. Let's go down to the sea and see what we can see. Clippers and colliers by the sea, oh, the trees for you and me. Life in the waves, you have to be brave when you go to the sea in boats. Let's go down to the sea in boats, for I'm a sailor on the sea. Let's go down to the sea and see what we can see. Punch and Judy by the sea, a lively show and all for free. From markets where the bandit plays, jigs and reels to a lively sway. From up the mine, ascending coal by railway line. The boats are berth, the trimmers engage, or working in the colony's trade. Let's go down to the sea in boats, for I'm a sailor on the sea. Let's go down to the sea and see what we can see. Far away and raising steam, the colony is chugged with bellies of coal. From Brighton Hotel, it's a lively scene when you go to the sea in boats.
Let's go down to the sea in boats, for I'm a sailor on the sea. Let's go down to the sea and see what we can see. The tallyman tallies the tons of coal, the steamer and dull has filled a hole. The whistle it blows, she's under tow. When you go to the sea in boats.
G'day listeners, Phil C here, and this is Roman Oz, and we are in Lowhead, and I am chatting with one of Lowhead's resident talented, both in musically, photographic background, Mr. Vince Brophy. How are you going today, Vince?
Pretty good, thank you, Phil. Not too bad at all. Mate, very, very pleased to be here with
mate,
you.
Mate, thank you so much for inviting us into your home and sharing with us some of your incredible music. Now, tell us about your music. How long have you been a musician?
Look, I've over 30 years I've been a musician, and I've independently worked as a musician and made a living out of it.
Okay.
So I think I'm a bit of a rare diamond there, because most musicians have the
second job.
Absolutely.
Most musicians of today do music as a hobby more than anything, isn't it? Because they love to perform.
Yeah.
And they're either a plumber or electrician or a builder or something, whereas you have managed to make it your life.
Yeah, we have indeed. We paid mortgages off as well. But we had to do touring and and we had to diversify. So not only as a musician but as a children's performer. So anywhere from, you know, from 4 to 80, we were playing.
From 4 to 80?
4 to 80, the whole box of that.
Wow.
And then in between that, I have a recording studio, and I'm also a photographer and an artist. So it's all, you know, rolled up in one thing. You can't just do one thing. You have to do lots of things.
Yes. Now, you weren't originally from Tasmania. You're originally born in Ireland.
Yeah, in Dublin.
In Dublin, and came here as a £10... We can't say a £10 pom, can we?
Well, I suppose you can say a £10 pom, because, I mean, some of my siblings are born in England as well, but I'm born in, five of us born in Dublin.
Right. So you came out here as a young boy to Australia?
Yeah, as a 16-year-old, yes.
And when did you start playing music?
I didn't start playing until I was 27.
Really? So the first time you picked up an instrument, 27. What made you decide I want to play music?
It's been, and most of your listeners out there will realise that as long as you've got something to say.
Yes.
You know, as long as you have something to say, you can be a singer-songwriter, a writer, you know, if you've got something to say. And I had lots to say. I was working on the Maritime Services Board in Wollongong.
Right.
I was known as Vince Brophy, the Wharfie from Wollongong. Around the festival circuit.
Right.
It's all good fun.
Okay. So you started playing at 26, and when did you decide to get, like, professionally, and also the festivals, for example?
Well, the bug sort of hit when I, because I was working on the Maritime Services Board, I fell into a grant through the Australia Council, and a grant called Art and Working Life. And really the grant was there for people who were working in the community but performing in the community.
Okay.
So it gave you an opportunity. And the album there, Down to Sea and Ships, was the very first, and one of the last to be put out as a vinyl as well.
Oh, wow.
So it was one of the last to come out on the vinyl. Then it was redone by Hard Yakka Records in Adelaide as a CD. And I got the grant to, because I was already writing songs, and to answer your question, I started to perform in folk clubs and small venues around the place, and all of a sudden, you know, I mean, it's kind of nice when you realise you can sing.
Okay.
You know, and then, you know, and then the guitar playing just came.
You've had no actual singing tuition?
No, well, my dad was good.
Okay, so he taught you. taught you how to breathe and how to
project
from the diaphragm.
You just watch. You watch things. You listen. And okay. You learn how to do it all. Yeah.
Yeah. And guitar, self-taught.
Yes, absolutely. All totally self-taught. Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
So, what about music? You know, most self-taught musicians I know.
Yeah.
They know how to play, but they don't know how to write. So, how did you learn how to write music?
Well, I never really learned how to write music, but I came from a background of ear training, if you like.
Yes.
Ear training. So, you know, the being born in Ireland, I guess, you know, and I'm sure loads of other countries in a folk tradition have this sort of feel where they, you know, they know how to play by ear. And and that's basically what I do.
Okay.
You would hear things and you'd mimic things, you know.
Okay.
But it's about sitting down and learning your favourite song. And then once you've learnt your favourite song, you can then take that song and make it your own,
right,
if you like, and then you start writing within that genre and vein of what you're doing now.
Do you remember what the first song, this is probably going back a long time, but do you remember the first song you learnt?
Oh, I loved Cat Stevens. Oh,
yes.
My God.
So that was the first song you learnt to play?
Look, I don't know if it was the first one. Do you know, I think I actually learnt, and I learnt to play guitar while I was in Australia, not in England.
Okay.
But I was so into music. But no, my first song I would have learned was a song called Spancel Hill, which was an Irish folk song.
Okay.
Mm.
Right.
But I loved, you know, pop music. I was brought up in the pop music culture, the late 60s, mid to late 60s.
So who would be, do you have any influences?
Oh, absolutely. And lots of them are Irish, like Planxty, Christy Moore, Dee Dannon, on the Beatles, Don McLean.
Yes.
To mention, you know, Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young.
Okay.
You know.
Now, your wife, Jenny Mitchell, also sings. I noticed on this other album, which is called Between the Moon and the Sun.
Yeah, she only just sings. Only just sings.
Only just
she
sings?
She hates it.
So she hates the sound of her own voice like Lynn does?
Yeah, I'd say that's pretty well much the
case. Okay. So that's the only song she's actually singing.
But, you know, it's really, really interesting, isn't it, when you say stuff like that. She hates the sound of her own voice.
Right.
When we do shows in performances, you know, she's just got to open her mouth and within a nanosecond there are 30 children around her listening to her intently, you know. So she's got this beautiful mellifluous quality to her voice, to her singing, and she doesn't think it's good. And she's brought up in that country culture where they loaded a line.
Okay.
You know, and she's a really good storyteller.
Fabulous.
And she makes me laugh, and that's why I love her so much. Still.
So, you mentioned children. You also do children's shows. You've got an album called Jack and Molly.
Yeah, we do, yeah.
Green Grows My Garden and Christmas Favourites. So, and does she sing a lot on this one?
Yes, she does, yeah.
Okay.
She does, yes.
So why did you go from, I guess, the Down to the Sea in ships to entertaining children?
Well, Down to the Sea in ships was I was a part-time musician. I was playing in a bush band, and that folded, and I'd written all these other songs, so I was doing this part-time music. And then I met Margie in Woodford Folk Festival, and I just wanted to do music as a full-time thing. I didn't have much of a future as a rigger and scaffolder, crane driver and so forth. And when I met Margie, she invited me to her kindergarten.
So she was a kindergarten teacher?
She is a kindergarten director and teacher, yeah.
Okay.
She invited me over to South Australia to her kindergarten, and I said, I'd love to come over.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then... Yeah. I guess that's when you decided to come together musically.
Yeah, and Maggie, I asked Maggie then, would you consider, you know, joining me? And she said, that'd be fine, I'll do that. But she said, I really want to earn the money I'm earning now. So then we sort of did a three-year business plan and worked out how we could actually achieve all this.
Okay.
And it worked.
So did she say to you, I mean, she's already said, I want to make the money I'm earning now.
Yeah.
So did she think that you could possibly make that much money, like, and turn it into a career?
Yeah, she was, we were both very positive about it. And I think the thing that worked is that Maggie had the speak.
Okay.
The early childhood speak.
Right.
And it's completely different to primary school speak.
Okay.
And so the language and how you turn it over, and, you know, kindergarten directors are really no fuss.
Uh-huh.
They're no fuss at all. So no use putting a glossy brochure in front of them, you know. Put an A4 in front of them that you've printed out and that you've photocopied off.
Yep.
You'll get more pickup doing that. And we did. It was amazing. Yeah.
You said before you moved to Tasmania that you were working in Melbourne.
Yes.
And you had so many shows.
Yeah, we
had 3-4 shows a day.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah.
So
we were very, very busy and very, very popular.
Okay.
And the secret to any of that is, you know, is safety and reliability.
Yes.
Are my children safe? Are you reliable?
Okay.
You know, and you, quite obviously, you had to have an early childhood philosophy and an entertainment plus. You realise you're working with predominantly, you know, 3 to 5 year olds.
So why give up? And I say give up.
Yeah.
Because you're obviously in Tasmania. You're not working anywhere near.
Yeah.
I mean, you're now...
I'm going to answer this question before you ask this question.
Okay.
I got old.
But not tired.
No, definitely not tired.
So you're still to do what you were doing.
Yeah.
So you just said, what? You didn't think the children would relate to you now that you've gotten older? Or?
Well, you know, like, it's a natural transition because you're in the grandparent stage. I played Santa Claus this year, you know.
You did?
The end of last year, I played Santa Claus for a kindergarten group, so...
Fair enough.
Yes, they gave me a beard, you know, just added to mine. And so, yeah, you transition into that at the grandparent stage.
Fair enough.
That's good. You're still doing the same thing.
But, yes.
Yeah.
But now you came to Tasmania and you wrote an album here in Lowhead.
Well, I did, yes, in 2000. Well, I actually wrote the album in Melbourne.
In Melbourne?
In Melbourne. I was transitioning between Tasmania and Melbourne. You remember that I did the community arts here for a month.
Yes.
And so I'd gathered all this information. I'd doing what you're doing, recorded people and their stories, and then I was just in touch all the time. So I was always coming over to stay here for weekends and that, because we ended up buying a shack here with a couple of friends, and we used to transition over on weekends.
I'll just interject.
Yeah, there. Please do.
People on the mainland don't know what a shack is.
Yeah, good.
So, what is a shack?
Ah, it's just a weekender.
Yeah, little cabin.
Just a little cabin, yeah. Ours was... But people would go into ours and they'd say, that's not a shack, that's a house. We said, it's a shack.
When you say shack, you envisage something that's got no electricity and a fire in an open fire in the corner.
Yeah, but our version of a shack is that it's at least got a dishwasher.
I have to tell you, listeners, you can't see it, but if I can paint a picture for you, he's got the most magnificent home. Big open plan, lovely furniture, fabulous views that you'd pay millions of dollars for a view like this.
Wouldn't you, Phil? Wouldn't you?
Absolutely. Yeah. And let you just have it all here.
Mm.
So just to digress a little bit from your music, you're now doing photography.
Yes.
And you're an artist.
Yes.
So by artist, painting?
No, but I did paint years ago, but I don't do it at the moment. And funny you should say that. During COVID, I had to busy myself, you know, doing so. I took up the island. I became a member of the Island Project, which is about dementia. And if you join it, you got and you passed the required requisites for university. You know, you can go into uni and do it. And I went into uni via this course, and it's lovely. So I participate in their surveys, and you get a newsletter, you know, every quarter telling you what's actually going on. And it's a fabulous, fabulous thing because, you know, I mean, we all know people who have dementia.
Yes.
And so finding where it comes from, how it manifests itself and so forth is really, really interesting. But anyway, it allowed me entry into uni, and I did photography 1 and 2 there, and I've got 5 more courses to go, which, yeah, great, fabulous.
Mm.
And, yeah, so...
Now, you also have, you mentioned with your photography, you do a lot of, how would you call it, magic, I guess. You take a normal photograph and you turn it into something really crazy, which is absolutely brilliant art.
Yeah.
How did you come up by this? Like,
oh, just mad.
You just sort of sat there one day with a photo?
Yeah, I think it just runs in the genes. You know, you just go, say, are you mad? Say, yes, I can do this, you know.
Because this one that's just behind us of this lighthouse,
yeah,
that looks like the Leaning Tower of Pisa, but it's absolutely fabulous. And
this one over here. Yeah.
Yes, I mean, I looked at that and thought, wow.
And the lovely thing about that, the chappie on the ladder is Dr. Tim Mooney. So I said to him, I said, Tim, will you come on? I can take a photograph of you. I want to put you in one of my photographs. And he said, yeah, sure. So he dropped around and we put him out on the ladder out in the garage and put some lights on him. And then in Photoshop, I took him took the background away and I just put him on the ladder again, you know. So.
Is that the lighthouse that's just at the front here?
No, that's the one up at Lowhead.
Okay.
The one where you can see from the pilot station.
Right.
Where you've just been, yeah.
Now, you've got an exhibition happening at the moment. Tell us a little bit about that.
Okay, look, I'll do that, and I'll do it also with some visuals for your audience.
Okay.
I'm sure they'll get the humour.
Oh, yes.
Yes, I have. I've got an exhibition down at the Watch House at the moment from all my stuff that I did at uni last year. And it's called Something Precious.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's if I were to say to you, Phil,
right,
you know, I want to take a photograph of you, what's your precious item? You'd have to think about it long and hard.
Absolutely.
And then you'd probably go, hang on, is that precious or could I just buy that again?
Okay.
So at the present time, if I just go here, because visuals are really, really good to see. Here we are. So there you go. That's the...
Interesting.
Yeah. So, and the lovely thing is that it's actually just been found on... discoverytasmania.com.au, which is just fabulous. I mean, it's great publicity for me.
Absolutely.
You know? So the secretary of our little arts movement throws it out there into the ether.
Okay.
And Discovery Tasmania picked it up and put it up there, which is fabulous for this little town, you know. So we, but basically what the project was about is about something precious. What is your precious item?
Okay.
You know, so...
I might have to get you to take a photograph of me with something precious and turn it into something...
That'd
be lovely.
Yeah.
Now, speaking back to music, have you got any more new music? And we've got to talk about this music, because where can people buy your music?
Well, can I say to you, look, the best thing is to go in through... going through the website, which is you can say that if you want.
Okay, so this is... I'll let you read that, Lynn, because it's my eyes in this light.
vbrophy.myportfolio.com.
Yeah.
Vbrophy?
Right.
Yep. Yeah, vbrophy.myportfolio.com, yeah.
Okay.
So it's a photographic website, but you can also contact me through that. The other site I've got is jackandmolly.com.au.
Right.
All the W's, jackandmolly.com.au, and you can contact me through that. And that's not only just, that is primarily just for children's stuff, but you can just ask
me. Well, I was going to say, because Jack and Molly is the children's stuff, so if they want to get hold, you've got 4 albums in total, correct?
More. No. I've got, it's about 9 children's albums.
9 children's albums?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
And then you've got the Between the Moon and the Sun?
Yeah, there's about 5 or 6 albums that, to be in truth, I'm just thinking through as I haven't got them all here. They will be around the house somewhere.
Okay.
But kind of do them and say, well, that's done, move on to the next project. don't dwell on them.
Precious music, love listeners, does them and then puts them away somewhere and can't remember where you put them.
No, they're for other people to play.
That's true. And so the ones that we've got sitting here in front of us, we've got Down to the Sea, Down to the Sea in Ships.
Yep.
Brophy's Road.
Yep.
Between the sun and the between the moon and the sun. Yep. And Jack and Jill.
Yeah. And then Jack and Molly.
Jack and Molly.
Jack and Molly, please, Phil.
Yeah. I'll edit that out. So well. So
no, don't leave it in there. It'd be lovely humour.
So if anybody wishes to purchase any of these albums, the best place?
Well,
again.
Yeah, the best ones are vbrophy.myportfolio.com or jackandmolly.com.
Okay, fabulous.
.au.
We're going to play. Lynn, did you have any questions? No, she doesn't. I love that.
Ooh.
No questions. Happy wife, happy life. So we're gonna wind this up in a moment. I mean, I could go on forever.
Yeah,
he's
yeah.
such a likable man. I've only known him a couple of hours.
Oh, thank you very much, Phil. And look, I must say the same about you too.
Thank you so much. No, seriously, you've invited us into your beautiful home. You've made us a coffee. Made us feel like we're part of the family. Good. It's been an absolute pleasure for me.
And invited you to the birthday party.
Oh, well, we'll do our best. Fingers crossed. Now, I'm gonna play a song. Obviously, you've written all of this.
Yeah.
Do you have a favourite, and what album would it be on?
Well, yeah.
That's a hard question, but I know you said... I did ask you this question before we started.
Yeah,
you said, I love them all, so...
I do. I like them all, too. What do we agree that... What did...
Well, you said something from Brophy's Road.
Let me just have a look at that now. I could change my mind here now.
You could change your mind. We did mention that Vince is Irish. And I'm probably sounding very bad.
Excuse me, but only on my mother and father's side. Number three, Famine Island. It's a beautiful song and it tells a gorgeous story.
Okay.
You know, so I can briefly tell you a little bit about
the
story.
Yes, please do. Tell us a little bit about it and then we'll put the song on.
Yeah, I was doing some research in Melbourne because we had... because the woman I was working with, Cora Brown, a fabulous singer, we're both immigrants and we both sort of got this idea. Well, I basically got the idea and I put it to Cora. And from that, I wrote the song Famine Island because I had to do some research on stories and people who had come to us, people who had been sent out as the famine orphan girls. Now, I don't know whether you know, in Williamstown in Melbourne, they have a famine orphan rock.
No.
And it's representative of the just over 2,000 women that were sent out to Melbourne as famine orphans, and that was in the time of the famine in Ireland.
Okay.
And so when I was doing some research, I came across this book called The Decent Set of Girls.
Right.
Which was just a fabulous read. And so the book was written by the Surgeon General on board the boat, and it was a diary.
Okay.
Charles Strutt. And Charles Strutt was a Surgeon General out of Plymouth. And on board the boat, the Thomas Arbuthnot. And he looked after these women on this one particular journey out of, there must have been a dozen journeys, you know, with all women on board. All ages, but all rescued from the famine and the workhouses in Ireland in around about 1849, the end of 1849 into 1850, this particular boat. He left this beautiful diary, you know, this gorgeous diary. And it's a word-for-words thing, you know. So you can't help but put these, these lovely lines, you know, from the story into the song, and and it just all fitted. It came together under my fingers, and I was just thinking, oh my gosh, this is fabulous. And the lovely emotional thing about writing a song like that, if it brings you to tears, then you know that you've got something really nice, you know, because it's got this lovely emotional tie to it. So that's basically the story of that. And these women went for a landing in Sydney, and they went as far as down in Yass. Now, I know not connected to Melbourne, but I'm connected to Melbourne via the Famine Rock. So each year I would go and sing that song at the Famine Rock at our little commemoration we would have. And we've had some fabulous luminaries at the Famine Rock from the Irish government, you know, which is, you know, so because that is part of the diaspora, the Irish diaspora. We're part of it, you know, we're still included. although we're living 12,000 miles away, you know. So yeah, that's the story. But it's a beautiful song, I think, and and if you there is a YouTube of it too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Of you performing it?
Yeah, of me performing it, yeah. And we performed the YouTube on board the Norfolk that's down in at the Maritime Museum where Maggie works, my wife.
Okay.
Wife works. And we recorded it there, and thanks to the Georgetown Council allowed us to use the museum as the backdrop for it, and we've got great feedback about it. So it's called Femin Island. If you just do it on YouTube, Femin Island, Vince Murphy, you'll find it.
Or we'll have to attach the link.
Yeah, please. Yes,
we'll attach the link.
Yes, please do.
To this chat we've had.
Yeah,
Vince, thank you so much for your time.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
It's been an absolute pleasure meeting you. And I sincerely hope we can get back for your birthday.
Yeah, please.
We're not going to tell everybody how old you are, because we're going to get a photograph of you in a moment. You only look half your age.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's good, yeah. So I'm still 25. I love it.
Looking fabulous. There you go, listeners. Vince Brophy, and local artist, musician, and celebrity, shall we say.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Here at Lowhead. Thank you so much for your time.
Pleasure. Thanks, Phil. Thank you, Lynn. It's been a real pleasure.
No, it's been great. Thank you.
Yeah. Stick around, listeners. We'll be back with more Roman Oz straight after Famine Island from Vince Brophy's Brophy's Road album.
Guardian of these orphan girls, we are sailing on the Thomas Arbuthnot for the sunny shores of New South Wales, far from the famine workhouses, far from Famine Island, Famine Island. Last night the girls, they danced and sang. Now today, they keen their loss. They are gathered like banshees wailing for mothers and fathers, and leaving old Ireland on this Christmas Day, 1849. 1849. The days on board Faulkner dry routine, from Sunday prayers to another washing day. The girls, they keep their place very clean and neat, notwithstanding rough weather. They are full of emulation to excel on this day in January 1850. 1850. Mr. Davison viewed their accommodation, but the girls gave him so many sly pinches, and immediately they looked so innocent, the culprits could not be detected. Whereupon he was glad to make his escape on this day, January 18th, 1850. 1850. The wind more free today, we make an eastward course. We shall be compelled to go round Van Diemen's Land, but Biddy Carmody and some other girls was somewhat refractory.
Accordingly I made them a speech on this day, January 21st, 1850. 1850. Last night we anchored off Garden Island. Tomorrow we sail into Sydney Cove. Fatness of my girl, so neat and clean. Please, doctor, savage and cold. For the poor wretches, they work like horses. On this day, February 4th, 1850. 1850. From the journal of Dr. C. E. Strutt, I read the story of Earl Grey's orphan girls. They could only see down the years, from sailing boats to women in space, and see how they've shaped our today. On this day, November 18th, 2005. There were three towns in 1804, Sydney, Hobart and Georgetown. Now there's one in 2004, celebrating Georgetown, the sweetest town for miles around. I bid you find your way there, sir. I'll tell you more about this town, riddling rhyme and stitching time. The pilot station, the watchhouse, the stately grove, the lighthouse. Which one do I sing about in this riddling walkabout? Sail, sail from around the world to Georgetown, Tasmania. Sail the wild, wild blue, the oldest town in Australia. I live amongst your daughters and sons, stand between the moon and sun. Many lives were saved by me, I brightened many a family, and saved many tragedy. I could be the mystery. I'm at the mouth of the Tamar Valley, between Mount George and Bass Strait. I am the one with a very grand view of this town known by you. A fine piece of real estate and a nice piece of bait, bait. Sail, sail from around the world to Georgetown, Tasmania. Sail the wild, wild blue, the sweetest town in Australia. Georgetown, Tasmania. Kept my time, watched the moon turn the tide. I'd serve the governor, soldier, sailor, tinker, tailor, convict, whaler. In the name of prosperity, most passed by so carefully. I'm a sentinel on the landscape, buried between the earth and air. I'm between the rock and sea, always on time
from around the world to Georgetown, Tasmania. Sail the wild, wild blue, the oldest town in Australia. Georgetown, Tasmania. There were three towns in 1804, Sydney, Hobart and Georgetown. Now there's one in 2004, celebrating Georgetown, the sweetest town for miles around. I bid you find you with it, sir. Sail, sail from around the world to Georgetown, Tasmania. Sail the wild, wild blue, the oldest town in Australia, the sweetest town in Tasmania. Town in Tasmania, sweetest town in Tasmania.
Hi, good afternoon, listeners. Phil C here. This is Raymond Oz, if you've just joined us, and we are in Georgetown at the Bass and Flinders Maritime Museum, and I am chatting with Margie. How are you today, Margie?
I'm really well, Phil. It's really nice to have you and Lynn here with us visiting.
So thank you
so much. Into our museum.
I will indeed, but I should just let the listeners know, because we interviewed your husband earlier.
Yes.
That is the famous Vince Brothy. And, of course, he's a local talent, local musician, yes. Photographer, artist.
Yes.
And a man of leisure now, because you're down here working.
Yeah, I am.
He said you're the younger member of the team.
I am the younger member of the team, so yes, I know. When COVID hit, we had to reinvent ourselves, because no longer could we be performers on the road in early childhood.
Yes.
So I met Craig that works here, that volunteers here, that you're going to talk to later,
okay.
Who helped build our Norfolk that's in our museum,
okay.
Here. And the Elizabeth, he went sailing on the Elizabeth, and he brought this museum alive to me. And so I came here volunteering, first of all, just because I was starving of meeting people, because
okay.
Usually we travel and meet people like you are.
Yes.
So I just had the visitors come to me for a change, and uh-huh. I get to chat to them.
Fabulous.
Yes.
Yeah, so how long have you been at the museum?
I've been here 2 years now.
Right, okay. Mm. And was that the only reason? You were just starving for I guess, interaction?
Yeah,
or do you really love them?
I love history as well, because we're, as Vince would have told you, we got to live here for a month and look at the history of the area and just learn all about this amazing town, you know? Like,
yes.
The only one left. Sydney Town, Georgetown, Hobart Town, we're the only town left. So
yes.
Yeah, so they were the first three establishments. So
okay.
We were established here in Georgetown in 1804. Mm. So I have a great love of history, so it just extends into this museum to be able to share that with people that come through visiting.
Okay. And look, we've only just walked in here just a moment. It's fabulous.
Mm.
Now tell us all about the displays. Let's start with the Norfolk.
Yeah,
let's find out all about that.
Well, that's where the museum started as well. So
okay.
The Norfolk was a boat that, when you talk to Craig, he helped build that with Byrne Cuthbertson, and they took 3 years to build it. The interior and exterior are one hew and pine log.
Wow.
So, and then the masts and the booms are celery top, which is another Tasmanian timber that
right.
Has got really small little limbs and great for those masts and mm-hmm. Booms. While they were building that, he went off and reenacted Bass's journey down the east coast in a whaling boat similar to the Elizabeth that we have on display here.
Okay.
And that was 6 weeks of rowing and sailing from Sydney to Western Port, which is almost into the Bay of Melbourne. And he said it was a boy's own adventure. I'm not sure.
6 weeks of rowing and sailing. And
yeah.
How did they navigate?
They were just offshore, so they weren't that far offshore in that little boat. No, they came in every night and slept somewhere every night, but yeah, they sailed every day.
Okay.
But differently in the Norfolk was built to reenact Bass and Flinders' voyage of circumnavigating Tasmania.
Right.
So so that took 3 years to build, and it's built in there was never a painting or a drawing of the original Norfolk. The original Norfolk came from Norfolk Island.
Right.
It was on Norfolk Island. They were running out of food supplies in the late 1700s, and So they put together, they think, a boat that was made from one of the first fleet boats that was wrecked on Norfolk Island, yes. The Cirrus,
yes.
And local timbers. They brought that into harbour in Sydney, and the governor said, I'm sorry, boys, you can't take that back to Norfolk Island. Convicts will escape. But I just happened to have Bass and Flinders that want to go exploring. So he went and gave the Norfolk to Bass and Flinders to go exploring and to see if it was an island at all. So that's how they got that boat. So, so Byrne and a crew of six, with Craig included, reenacted that voyage. They had their own adventure. That boat, like all the reenactments, they're running close to time, to get up to Sydney to start it. They couldn't lose a day. So they hit seas as big as the seas that we lost the sailors in the Sydney to Hobart yacht race.
Wow.
They got hit by a rogue 45-degree angle wave that knocked them right over. The mast went right over under the water. Then she came back up again.
Oh.
But when you think about this boat, it's got no motor on board. It's only under sail, and so they just had to hang five. They hand pumped the water out. Craig says he's in the galley, and the pin comes out. So he says nothing like a drowning man get a bucket and bail out. So they were bailing out. So they just rocked around. They lost their long wave radio equipment. So they, Bega, suddenly realised something's wrong. They haven't radioed in to give their location. So rescue planes start going. On the third day, they realise there's a plane circling them. They go, that might be for us. So they've got shortwave radio, so they get on to see Orion from Adelaide that's got heat detectors, so they've found them. And they have said that they're radioed down to say, if that's the Norfolk below me, can you shine a torch on your mainsail? Craig says that six torches hit that mainsail in a flash. And then he says, we just want to know that you're all okay. And he said, yes, we are all okay. They just lost a sleeping bag and obviously radio equipment. He said, I'll let your families know. Byrne's wife said he knew he's okay because he hadn't let the flare go. Like, how bad does it have to get? So they said, do you know where you are? And he said, well, we've got a sextant out and we're trying to work it out. And we think that we're 50 nautical miles off Bermagui. And he said, I'll just check for you. He says, you're 48.
Oh, wow.
So, Byrne was an amazing sailor. And I didn't get to meet him, but an amazing captain and an amazing sailor on to have as your captain on board. So Craig said if he said run a sail up or run a sail down, you were on it straight away. Wow. So,
amazing. Yeah. So how long did that journey take?
That took 3 months to go up to Sydney, come down, go circumnavigate Tasmania and then back up to Sydney. And then Matthew Flinders had mapped up as far as Hervey Bay, so they continued on up into Queensland and mapped up, called into Hervey Bay before coming back to Hobart. And then the boat sat for quite a few years because this was all in 1998, the year that 200 years later. Mm-hmm. So the boat sat for nearly 7 years then, waiting for a location where it could come. Byrne really wanted it to come north because there wasn't anything to commemorate Bass and Flinders in the north. And Bass and Flinders spent 17 days up the Tamar or the Kanamaluka, exploring, looking for water, looking for settlements. And so he wanted it to be up here north. So this building was an old picture theatre, and at the time it was empty, and the local Gunn family helped support to purchase the building and to along with locals to get it all located here. So in she came.
So how did you get it into the museum? You obviously didn't sail it in waiting for a big tide. How did you get it in?
They had a big crane and they lowered in by crane. So the building wasn't tall enough for a mast to go in. So they got a big grant to extend the building at the back. And then they got a crane, which they had to use next door's yard because we haven't got anywhere. So they had to use next door's yard. Luckily, it had a big space. And they craned it in and lowered down into the museum. And then the museum was really built around that. So built a wharf off the side of it, and then the other boats started to come in. Okay. The Elizabeth came in and, other boats came in. So, amazing. So we're very lucky to have all those.
And you've got some smaller boats in there as well. You've got the Tom Thumb, which is only about 8 or 9 feet. So
that's
we're going
right.
from the the biggest one to the smallest one.
Yes.
What was the Tom Thumb?
Well, the Tom Thumb, everyone, like, if they grew up in New South Wales like I did, when they went to primary schools, they learned that Bass and Flinders circumnavigated Tasmania in the Tom Thumb.
Wow.
Well, that's not true.
Okay.
But it doesn't state the name of the Norfolk in any of those social studies, because I've looked it up because I was curious. So the Tom Thumb was actually a boat that Bass and Flinders used in the Georges River in Sydney to go exploring, and they did get down as far as Wollongong in the Illawarra to go exploring and checking out countryside with that. When the boys did the reenactment, they used the Tom Thumb as a life-saving boat on board the Norfolk, so it was strapped onto the side and went on the journey with them.
In case the big boat went down.
Yes.
So they were going to row this tiny little
boat. Yeah, that's right, yeah. That was going to be the rescue boat. I'm not sure how good that would have been. Craig will tell you.
So how many was on the Norfolk when they did this reenactment?
They had six crew on board.
Six crew.
Yeah, so three on, three off. And it's under tiller. When you have a look on the boat, the boat's under tiller, not under a wheel.
Okay.
And so it's got to be actively engaged all the time. Mm.
So I couldn't imagine six of them in the Tom Thumb.
No.
There would have been a few arguments.
There might have been. No, I think they were good.
No doubt. So what about the Admiral? Now, that's a 28-foot rowing ferry.
It is, that's right. That's one of the oldest surviving wooden boats here in Australia.
Okay.
And that was found up on the Hastings River in Taree. Oh. Someone was going up the river and they rang Byrne and said, "Byrne, I think we found the Admiral." Luckily, it survived because it's got hew and pine and she oak and blue gum, and it was made in 1865 in Hobart as a water taxi. There was a bit of one-upmanship, you know. There was the Cormorant going already there, but they named this one the Admiral because you can't go higher than the Admiral. So there's a bit of rivalry in town, can we say, between the people that were doing ferrying across the river at those times. But yeah, we're very lucky to have that. And so that boat, when they picked it up in Taree, it weighed 3 ton. It had been converted to a fishing boat and had lots of different lives. It changed its name. So when they brought it back down, they pulled it apart, restored it, cut the back off it, took the tops off, you know, a lot of work. And then eventually it got brought into the museum here upstairs. So.
Mm. Wow. So apart from these four magnificent vessels, what else can people expect to see when they come to the museum?
Well, they're lucky enough to... Well, the big thing that I think is wonderful here at the museum is the fact that you can go on board the Norfolk and you can go down inside the cabins in the Norfolk. So it's not roped off and you can't go and see. So that's a big highlight for here. If people are interested in more history about Bass and Flinders, we actually have a movie about Flinders that you can't see anywhere else in Australia. It's here.
Right.
The other boats that we have, we've got a small little boat, the Melanie, that's made by our local school children.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a Sea Scout boat, a KD, that the Sea Scouts used to train in. We actually had some Sea Scouts in earlier this year and they were all excited to see that boat and they're going, "Oh, but ours is fiberglass." I wouldn't like to lift that boat. It's wood and it's really solid and heavy. People have donated canoes and, little sabs and all sorts of boats. So there's lots and lots of boats in here to see. So and just the history, to pick up that history. And we take time to talk to people when they come in.
Yes.
We fill them in a bit on the history of Bass and Flinders, or if they're interested in boats, we talk about the boats and how the boats were made. And and then they can come up on board with us. So,
fabulous.
Yeah.
Absolutely unbelievable.
No, but it's just it's a great experience. We're a little bit hidden down around the corner of the road. People find us a little bit hard to find. But, but once you come in, we had a French lady came in. She goes, "Whoa, like a magic surprise." So, it's when you go through those doors, you're not really, you don't know what's going to be in here outside. So,
that's absolutely right.
So we're so lucky to have it in here. So
I was amazed when I walked in because the first thing you see when you walk through the door is the Norfolk's
there. Yeah. And we're lucky we've got a great team of volunteers. We've got Ivy, she's my brains trust if it's history in relation to Bass and Flinders, and then we've got Craig if it's relation to the boat and the sailing or the making of the boat. So it's great to have them. People just sort of love to hear, you know, those stories from a person, and they love listening to Craig because, like, it's first-hand experience. Mm. He did that and touched it and made it and things like that. So we're very lucky to have him here as well.
Mm. Well, we're going to be chatting with Craig a little bit later on in the afternoon. Yeah, he's going to be on the program with us as well. Margie, thank you so much for
your time. All right, it's been a pleasure.
A wealth of information for both of us.
Yeah, and the more that people know about us, come and have some time.
Now, I've got to end this segment, and as my listeners know, I always play a song at the end of each segment. Mm-hmm. What song can I play for you today?
Well, can I request that you play a song called Letter to Anne, which is a song my husband wrote, Vince wrote, about Matthew Flinders wrote back to his wife Anne.
Okay.
And it's about, and it tells the story of his adventures here in Australia and just gives you a feeling of the distance that they must have felt, you know, in those times.
And this was written, of course, by your husband Vince.
Yeah.
And it's on his album Between the Moon and the Sun.
Yeah, which the local council here backed for us to do a residency here. And then they actually backed to put that album together, which was just a most wonderful experience. And that's why we live here now.
Absolutely. Fabulous. Okay. Well, that's what we're going to do then. Thank you so much, Margie. Thank you so much for chatting with us today.
Not a problem. Okay.
We'll be back with more Roman Oz listeners straight after Letters to Anne from Vince Brophy's Between the Moon and the Sun.
My dearest darling, and I write to you a letter from across the sea. Tonight we anchor on 40 latitude at a port called El Rinfo. Dined upon wild river swan, Mr. Bass and I hear the French are here as well. At war, starlight, star bright, I wish you were with me tonight. Starlight, star bright, I wish I were in England tonight. My dearest darling, and I write to you from two oceans away, from this land of Eden I call Australia. To navigate for 2 long years through homesick eyes, for home I sail in 1803 to my dearest best mom. Starlight, I wish you were with me tonight. Starlight, star bright, I wish I were in England tonight. I sailed for England October that year, but my boat was found to be. I sailed into Isle de France, but a prisoner I was kept. No one knew of my life for these long, long years. My dearest darling, and I write to you from the Isle de France. It is November 1805, I am imprisoned on this isle. They say the war still rages on, I must the prisoner stay. For my cause of science, far from Lincolnshire. Starlight, star. I wish you were with me tonight. Starlight, star bright, I wish I were in England.
Hope you enjoyed the show, listeners.
If you missed any, check out our Facebook page, Spotify, or RomanOz.com.au.
Tune in next week for more
Roman Oz.